Let me see you just A with me, just B with me, just C with me, come on. Let me see you just D with me, just E with me, just F with me, come on. Let me see you just G with me, just H, just I with me, come on. J, K, L, ha, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 41 of Parody Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. Why in the world would I do a fantastic rendition or parody of Men in Black's, Will Smith's Men in Black song? Well, you'll find out in a second. But first, I have just a minor bit of housekeeping. If you are following this podcast on iTunes, you may have noticed that 38 posted to iTunes and 40 posted to iTunes and 41 posted to iTunes. Hopefully, I haven't actually finished recording yet, so I'm speaking blessing over the future. But where is 39? That's an excellent question. I don't know why iTunes didn't pick up that podcast. So the way that I've worked out to get this podcast on iTunes, and I'm very blessed that it's there, is I record the podcast? Yes, I record the podcast. I record the podcast into a camera, and then I take it from that camera and I put it on my computer, and I edit it down and take out the parts where I have to sneeze or such, and I put music on it, and then I export it into an MP3 file, and I bring that MP3 file over to my laptop, and I load from the laptop to archive.org, which is one of the places you can find me if you go to archive.org and search PQRST. And then I cross-deck it from Archive to my WordPress account, which is another place you can find me if you go to WordPress.com and look for Movie Nitpicker, M-O-V-I-E-N-I-T-P-I-C-K-E-R, M-O-U-S-E, no, Movie Nitpicker. It's another way to find me. And then iTunes looks for it there. And the only thing that was different between 38 and 39 is that I loaded the podcast with a different computer. But I did it exactly the same way I've done every other. And I did it exactly the same way and on the same computer as 40 and soon to be 41. And they loaded just fine. So I don't know why iTunes couldn't find 39. But if you're like me and you're a completionist and you want to listen to every last one of these podcasts and you find me through iTunes and you want to know where 39 is, feel free to find me on WordPress.com. Again, it's Movie Nitpicker. Or go to archive.org and search for PQRST. 39 was a really good episode, in fact, which is why it was very annoying that iTunes didn't find it. But anyway, 40 was not so great. It's one of the low ones. But 41 is going to be fantastic. Now that I've said that, another thing that I wanted to do, meant to do last time and forgot, is a name drop. Boom! Thanks to Matt Willie, a friend of mine for long time now, for many years back, who is a missionary with Trans World Radio, and he is overseas at this moment. He messaged me and said that he has been enjoying the podcast. So outside of him, I don't know who's listening. And occasionally I check on Archive, and there's 20 or 30 hits per episode, so somebody out there is listening. God bless you. But hey, I know that Matt Willie is, because he told me himself. So wanted to drop his name for all the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of listeners out there. And if you are interested in having your name dropped on this podcast, because it is a feather in one's cap, let me say, I will give you the secret code word. That's right, the secret code word at the end of the episode that you can message me or write me on Facebook or send me an email or put a comment on my WordPress blog. Sorry, I got a little distracted. Cat just jumped in my lap. All right, I don't know that I have a rant today. That was enough with the housekeeping. Let's get right into the nitpicking for Men in Black. Unlike I Am Legend, this is the second Will Smith movie in a row for this podcast. Unlike I Am Legend, I love Men in Black. I have watched it many, many times. I have parts of it memorized. I recently watched it with the director's commentary. The director, his name escaped me. Of course it did. But also Tommy Lee Jones, one of the, of course, actors, head actors on Men in Black, was also part of the podcast. And wasn't Soderbergh. I don't know. Google it. But he and the director, who shall remain apparently nameless, and Tommy Lee Jones went through the movie and talked about it. And that was fun. It was fun to watch a movie I know real well and learn some more things about it. I love director's commentaries when they're good. The director's commentary on U.S. Marshals was not something I loved. I guess I'm going to rant after all. Because the guy got I don't even remember who the director was, and even if I did, I don't think I'd say his name, because I don't know. Maybe he's a good director. He's terrible at DVD commentary. It's his movie. It's his action movie. He talked about the movie for about 20, 25 minutes, and then suddenly it was silent for a few seconds, and another voice came on and said, if you'd like to hear more director's commentary, please fast forward to chapter 37, or whatever. Benefit of the doubt, maybe there was an audio problem, and the stuff he recorded suddenly stopped being recorded, and then suddenly the microphone came on again an hour later, or maybe he took a phone call. I don't know, but all I do know is it's the guy's own movie, and for an hour of it, he had nothing to say about it. Tim Burton's commentary on Batman, well, maybe I had too high expectations for that one. I was kind of bored. The commentary on Tombstone got a little annoying because the guy kept saying, these are all real. That's a real mustache. These are real costumes. These are real. But nothing beats U.S. Marshals for sheer just ridiculousness, because basically, why'd they bother putting it on the DVD? There's nothing there. On the contrary, if you'd like to listen to a great DVD commentary, return to me. Bonnie Hunt and Don Lake do a fantastic job. It's hilarious. Miss Congeniality, Sandra Bullock does a great job, and it's hilarious. The Goonies movie, that commentary, I don't know if there's more than one, but there's at least one which has most of the cast telling stories, and it's phenomenal. So far, any of the four that are on four different commentaries on the Lord of the Rings Special Edition, of which I will admit I've listened to three of. But enough about me being a total dork. Men in Black. If you haven't seen the movie in a while, aliens live amongst us here on Earth, or at least the Earth in the movie. And the only way that the regular, normal humans, the Muggles, if you will, are kept from knowing that aliens are among us and the ensuing panic that would almost certainly happen is because of the Men in Black, the black-suited, black-sunglassed agents that liaise between the aliens and the rest of mankind. And it was a comic thing. Much like Blade, I'm enough of a comic book nerd, it's kind of embarrassing that I had no idea there was Men in Black in the comics before the movie came out. Like I say, the same deal with Blade. Somehow I just missed it. And there was also a cartoon series that came out after the first movie, and I watched like at least one episode, maybe even two. But it's the movie that we're talking about. And in the early stages of the movie, oh, and before I get into the nitpicking, just one little thought that I wrote down for the nonfiction series that I wrote that I'm taking this from. Quote from the movie. This is Kay, Tommy Lee Jones' character. 1,500 years ago, everybody knew that the Earth was the center of the universe. 500 years ago, everybody knew that the Earth was flat. And 15 minutes ago, you knew that people were alone on this planet. Imagine what you'll know tomorrow. It's a good line, and every time I hear it, I think about how everybody knows that global warming is this horrible, terrible thing. And feel free to think that I'm an idiot, but I don't think global warming is a thing. Oh my gosh, 88% of scientists say it is. Yes, well, there was a time when 88% of scientists said that the sun went around the Earth, and they were wrong. And also, I just call your attention to acid rain. Remember about 30 years ago when acid rain was this horrible thing that was going to kill us all? Do you know anybody that has had any effect or has ever even experienced rain that was acidic? You haven't? Huh. I wonder if global warming is just another way for the powers that be to keep us all in line through fear. I don't know, but Michael Crichton's book, the late lamented Michael Crichton, his book State of Fear, has some interesting thoughts for anyone who absolutely believes that global warming is a thing. You could potentially be wrong. No need to sharpen stakes or light torches. Moving on to the nitpicking. 4 minutes, 28 seconds. So we have the long shot with the insect and the fantastic Danny Elfman music, and then the insect is squashed on the windscreen, the first of many to be squashed in this movie, and we see the police pulling over some suspected illegal immigrants. And Tommy Lee Jones, the Men in Black agent K, drives into the scene, and he gets out and he tells the Border Patrol guys that he's with INS, Division 6. And apparently, if you have a black suit and a government-type car, you don't have to carry ID with you because the Border Patrol policeman doesn't ask to see any. 5 minutes, 28 seconds. Again, he didn't show ID. K tells the illegal immigrants, except for one, to get in the truck and be off. And the Border Patrol guy still doesn't stop him, this time because K is giving him attitude. So apparently, if you just act like you belong, people don't question you. There is some thought to that. I mean, I have walked into many, many dance recital halls by saying, hey, I'm the video guy, and the fact that I was telling the truth, notwithstanding, very rarely does anybody worry about confirming that. They usually just let me go. So, hey, if you ever want to get into a dance recital for free, just say you're the video guy. But if they question why you think you should get in that way, don't mention my name. 5 minutes and 30 seconds. There is no Division 6. This is bull crap. And yet, despite all the bull crap, the cops just stand by their car, letting these unknown men take the illegal alien out into the desert. 7 minutes, 1 second. So the interview with Mikey and the head on the stick is, I mean, I could nitpick that, oh, you can't see any sort of control elements. So what? It's a head on a stick. It's wonderful. The interview with Mikey goes south, and D is supposed to shoot the alien that's running away. And it's a good thing for the Border Patrol guy that apparently his training isn't really up to scratch, because I'm pretty sure that if something's running at you and you're a cop, you're supposed to draw on it, even if it looks weird. The alien, lucky for him, the Border Patrol guy doesn't run very fast, because K allows 13 seconds for D to fumble for his weapon before he finally takes Mikey down. 7 minutes, 36 seconds. Keep in mind, these black-suited men have not provided any proof of identity, affiliations, or intentions. The cops at the car hear an explosion. They race over the ridge. One of their own is covered in blue goop, mumbling intelligently. Kay says, calm down and I'll explain everything. And the cops not only let him tell a story, they don't even question that he's about to reach in his pocket and pull out something. Maybe they train Border Patrol differently, but I'd like to think that police officers would go to greater lengths to protect themselves. 9 minutes. The cleanup crew has arrived, and they're burning all these cacti, which is a fun visual. As they're burning, we notice that Kay walks past all these alien entrails that nobody seems to be worried about burning away. So Kay's partner, D, doesn't want to be an agent anymore. Kay's like, all right, well, let's make it so you're not an agent anymore. He pulls out the neuralizer, and suddenly Kay needs a new partner. Does Kay really have the right to do this? I mean, the Men in Black is a government agency. There's no oversight. There's no paperwork. He just comes back to the office alone. Man, Men in Black, it's pretty harsh. There's no honorable discharge, no pension, just zap, and we put out a now hiring sign. And, for that matter, so D has just been neuralized, apparently, based on later information in the movie, back to where he was before he joined the Men in Black. So he's just lost who knows how many years off his life. He's alone in the desert. I'm just curious what story Kay told him, or if Kay even bothered to tell him a story. Like, huh, I'm in a desert in a black suit. Why is that? 10 minutes, 15 seconds. So now we see Will Smith as Jay. He's going to be Jay. I forget if he has James. I think it was James. We'll call him James. We see James, Officer Edwards, chasing down a fugitive. And it's very interesting that the guy he's chasing isn't stopping. It's my understanding that in that situation, it is permissible to fire on a fleeing fugitive, but apparently this guy isn't important enough or dangerous enough to fire upon, but he is important enough for James Edwards to jump off a bridge to try to capture him. 10 minutes, 51 seconds. Officer Edwards collars the fugitive. He gets his man. It'd just be raining black people in New York City. So many good lines in this movie. The guy pulls out this very complicated firearm. A, where was this gun when he was being chased? Because it's far too bulky to fit in a pocket. Two, he fires it, he drops it, it disappears in a burst of flame. What is the point of a gun? Okay, I get the point of a gun that leaves no evidence behind, but you trip and you fall and the gun bursts into flame? I'm just saying it's a poor design. 11 minutes, 22 seconds. Nitpicking aliens is difficult, I will admit. The fugitive climbs right up a wall without even pretending to stick to it, almost as if he was being pulled up on wires, and the wires were later erased digitally by the filmmakers. But he is an alien, so maybe he can do that. 11 minutes, 48 seconds. I don't think they're in the Guggenheim, but whoever designed this building, Officer Edwards starts running clockwise up this ramp. Presumably he's going all the way up to the roof. And I'm guessing this is the only way up to the roof, or he doesn't know where a regular set of stairs are. But anyway, the next time we see him, he's still running. Now he's counterclockwise. So you go up a ramp one way, then you turn and you go up the next, and this building is ridiculous, is all I'm saying. 12 minutes, the fugitive, who got up onto the building in about 2 seconds, now frantically runs around pulling at locked doors. He's trapped on the roof. I suppose he could be afraid of heights, but... 12 minutes, 25 seconds. So Officer Edwards has drawn down on his fugitive, finally. The fugitive blinks cat-like eyelids. He's proving himself to be unique, even strange. In this situation, it seems odd that a trained, hardened New York police officer would lower his weapon, which Edwards does. It's only a couple of inches, but I feel you'd still want to have the best bead on a perp that you could, he said, as though he had any officer training himself. But, moving on, the bug comes down out of the sky and his spaceship crashes on the farm. And Vincent D'Onofrio does such a fantastic job in this movie of looking like a really gross alien. It's fantastic acting. And he's a fantastic actor. It's amazing, though, 14 minutes, 38 seconds in, how the bug in the Edgar suit looks like a weird human. I mean, how does the bug get... He's put Edgar's skin on, but how does he get his fingers and his mouth moving? How does he drink the sugar water? I'm a nitpicker. I'm supposed to ask these things. 15 minutes, 44 seconds. I don't mention a lot of continuity in this podcast, but this one's an interesting one. Edgar's wife has told him that his skin looks all weird, so the bug in Edgar's suit pulls his skin way back on his head. What's up, brother? But then when the shot changes, Vincent D'Onofrio is just pulling his hair back, and his skin is pretty much normal. So if you watch the shot change, you can see that they didn't bother doing an effect on the second part. 16 minutes, 4 seconds. Edgar pushes his spaceship out of the hole, and later, of course, we learn that this is a giant cockroach alien that's bigger than the spaceship he's pushing. How did he fit in there? I guess if he can fit into Edgar's skin... This is not a nit, just another of the great lines from this movie. 16 minutes, 43 seconds. The cop to Officer Edwards. If you were half the man that I am, what are you talking about? I am half the man that you are. Fantastic. 70 minutes, 22 seconds. Officer Edwards meets Kay, and Kay uses his neuralizer on Dr. Weaver. Just ping, flashy things her, and then walks past. Does not give her any sort of explanation story. So does it not matter? Are you allowed to flash away memories without doing anything? Just saying that there's a lack of continuity with the flashy thingy. And then Kay takes Officer Edwards down to see Jeeves looking for an alien weapon. And Kay shoots Jeeves' head off, which is okay because he grows it back. When he shoots his head off, there's flying muck everywhere. But the next time you see Jeeves and the store around him, that muck has conveniently disappeared. So, 26 minutes, 38 seconds. Officer Edwards has decided that he wants to look into this Men in Black thing. And so he shows up for the recruitment test. And it's convenient that the next day they're having... I don't know, maybe they recruit every day. Or it's just convenient. But, hey, it's a movie and some things have to be convenient. And... The recruits are all in the room in these very uncomfortable egg-shaped chairs, and we see them trying to take their tests. And the director, Barry Sonnenfeld, I'm going to say that's who the director's name is. I should look it up, but I don't care that much. The director in the commentary said that the whole point is who is going to bring the table over, that by bringing the table over, Officer Edwards proves he is the winner of that particular test. And it's an interesting continuity error that at 26 minutes, 38 seconds, you see all six egg-shaped chairs and the Art Deco table is smack in the middle of them. We watch them having trouble with their tests. Edwards decides to get the table, and the next time you see the table, suddenly it's on the far side of the room, which makes it funnier that he has to drag it screeching all the way across. But how did it get from the middle of the room all that far away from him silently? 29 minutes, 35 seconds. All the recruits except Edwards are neuralized in a room with a door open where anybody could be walking by. Does that make sense? This is a government agency, and, you know, they put the sunglasses on so they don't see they're not affected by the neuralizer. I'm just saying. 32 minutes, 19 seconds. Kay explains the MIB way of life. You know, James asks, what's the catch? And don't I have a great Will Smith accent? Thank you. And Tommy Lee Jones says, the catch is you will sever every human contact. Nobody will know you exist anywhere, ever. Okay, except for everybody who works for MIB and the other aliens. I mean, he's exaggerating a little bit. And I wrote down in the blog way back when I put this that I don't care what it pays or how interesting it would be, there is no job I can imagine that would be worth severing all human contact. And I'm an introvert saying that. 33 minutes, 25 seconds. The spaceship, Edgar's spaceship, is an amazing thing. Because the truck that Edgar, the exterminator truck, he loads the ship into, when you first see him trying to get it into the ship, it's definitely not going to fit. Now you see the truck and the spaceship is in the back, and it's only sort of poking out. Basically, the ship seems to change size very conveniently. 34 minutes, 20 seconds. James has come back to the MIB building, and he's like, hey, I'm definitely in. And he gets in the elevator with Kay, and there's this funny thing about how, you know, don't call me slick or sport or whatever. Then the back of the elevator doors open, and they get on a platform that then lowers 20 feet to the ground. Is there a point to the elevator opening up 20 feet in the air? Why not just have it open up on ground level? Because then you wouldn't have the dramatic shot of seeing the aliens. And, you know, it is government spending. I don't expect it to be all that careful. 34 minutes, 56 seconds. One of the unique and cool and fantastic things about this alien facility, there's a human in the background walking on a walkway upside down. Is there any purpose behind that, or does it just look cool? I mean, I'm saying I would hate to be the new office guy. All right, Larry, today is upside down day for you. And then moments later, 35 minutes, 27 seconds, Officer Edwards unfortunately hits into this alien-type super ball that bounces all around the office, causing havoc. After containing it, Kay explains the device previously caused a blackout. If this thing is so dangerous, why is it out in the open where anybody can bump into it? Because it makes for good comedy. But again, I'm a nitpicker. I don't deal in reality. 36 minutes, 4 seconds. The Super Ball smacks straight into Kay's hand, which it's fortunate that he's wearing the containment finger doohickey, because otherwise his hand would have been shattered. And then he puts the Super Ball right back where it was, where anybody can knock into it and make it fly away again. 36 minutes, 29 seconds. Not a nit, but blink and you miss it. If you've ever wondered, they show us, here are some of the aliens under constant surveillance, and then they go into the joke about how Will Smith's, Officer Edwards' teacher was an alien. The other aliens, some of which pop up on the screen, Sylvester Stallone, Ted Kennedy, Al Roker, and Men in Black executive producer Steven Spielberg. Would explain a lot, wouldn't it? So now they go to initialize Jay as a member of the MIB. Several things about this. Yeah, there is an A. They go past all these lockers, and each one just has a letter. So instead of being Officer James Edwards, he's now just J. And K presumably was Kyle or Keith or Kiara. So they go by a locker with a D on it. Didn't K's partner need that locker? Well, I guess he doesn't need it anymore. Have they already replaced him with somebody named D, or is that an empty locker now? While I'm on the subject, are there only 26 members of the MIB? Is it just luck that there was no J already? I mean, it's cool that, hey, he's just a letter now, but it does seem very limiting. One last thing. Again, it's the government. I don't expect them to be terribly efficient, but J's locker is between G and D. Why? I guess if there's only 26 of them, it's not that hard to find your letter, but I still think alphabetization makes more sense. 38 minutes, 15 seconds. Tommy Lee Jones, you will only wear attire specifically sanctioned by MIB Special Services. I guess it's not really a nit, but it is amazing how much influence Jay has on the MIB structure, because by the end of the movie, he has changed the suit, he's changed the glasses, at least for him. 40 minutes, 40 seconds. So they drive a Ford POS, and I still remember being amused when I first figured out what the POS stood for. I'm not going to say it here. Ask somebody around you if you don't know. The Ford, though, has special alien technology, so it looks like a crappy car, but performs like a Formula One racer. Well, apparently one of its many tricks is speeding up film. Because at 40 minutes and 40 seconds, that's how I make it seem like our heroes take off from the Men in Black facility. Suddenly, the people behind Jay's head are speed walking and everything. 41 minutes, 10 seconds. The Arkillian Majesty puts his cat in a bag on top of the taxi and goes to pay the driver, and he insults the driver as he does so, and it's not a nit, but I would think if you were going to insult a New York City taxi driver, you wouldn't want your cat on the roof of his car as you were doing so. 41 minutes, 52 seconds. The really, really tall alien warns the Arkillian Majesty, who we later find out is a 3-inch alien inside the head of this Italian-looking guy. Italian? Jewish? I don't know. Ethnic-looking guy. The really, really tall alien warns the Arkillian Majesty about the bug that has landed. Now, this is the same really tall alien who was clearing, or at least sort of looks like, that we saw clearing MIB Customs back when Jay was being shown around and hitting the Super Bowl. Why didn't this guy ask for help with his bug problem when he was around MIB agents? Maybe he doesn't trust the Men in Black. And just a note for you, one of the things, unfortunately, I should have taken notes when I was listening to the commentary, because I'd forgotten that Men in Black was one of the movies I'd be getting to. But I do remember that the director, God bless him, whatever his name is, and Tommy Lee Jones talked about how this scene in the diner with the Arkillian Majesty and the really tall guy, they were supposed to be arguing. They're from different alien species, and the plot of the movie used to be they were going to go to war with each other. And for some reason, that didn't work, and so the whole Edgar bug in a suit going to steal the Orion's belt... steal that galaxy, that came out later. And so the scene in the diner was going to have a completely different context, but since they're not speaking English anyway, all they did was change the subtitles and the rest of the scene could stand as filmed. Wasn't that fascinating? Aren't you glad I stopped to tell that story? You're welcome. Jay and Kay pull over an alien who is out of bounds and is trying to flee the Earth. 43 minutes, 26 seconds. I'd like to see your other license and registration, please. All right, it's a funny joke, but Kay's not impersonating a police officer. He's coming up as an MIB agent and talking to an alien, and there's no humans around that need a charade, so why is everybody pretending this is a routine traffic stop? 43 minutes, 32 seconds. A lot of ninja skills in this movie. Here, Jay's practicing them. At 43:18, we look at Kay leaning on the car window. We cut to the pulled-over alien, we cut back to Kay, and suddenly Jay is standing a few feet behind him in plain view. He wasn't there 14 seconds before, and we don't hear any footsteps to indicate he's moved around. There is enough time for him to have tiptoed silently into position. Ninja skills. 43 minutes, 43 seconds. Speaking of ninja skills, where are you going, Reggie? Well, it's my wife. Well, look. We look in the back seat, and there is a very pregnant Mrs. Reggie, who didn't make a peep in the 14 seconds that Kay and Reggie are joking about the two different types of license and registrations. For a woman who's about to have a baby, she'd be an awful quiet back there. Now, this is not a nit. Either it's a nit or I screwed up, and I'm going to say that I'm the one that got it wrong. 44 minutes, 42 seconds. It's one of many funny scenes in the movie. Jay, who's supposed to handle delivering the alien baby, and maybe alien babies are delivered much more easily than human babies, because... the baby's dad does not seem at all concerned that this rookie MIB agent is dealing with this. But anyway, Jay, at 44 minutes, 42 seconds, is grabbed by a tentacle and thrown around. He's slammed on the top of the car. He's thrown away. I always thought it was the baby doing this, but apparently not, because the tentacle throws him completely out of the car, lets go of him, and he lands with a baby in his lap. So maybe it was the baby's mother grabbing Jay and throwing him around, which does make more sense given the way traditionally pregnant women act when they're giving birth, which they have every right to, because I don't know how they go through with that. I've seen it in person, and power to you if you were a pregnant woman. You're not going to hear me complaining about how you give birth. But it makes more sense if it's the mother throwing Jay around in a fit of anger. I just, for some reason, always thought it was the baby. If you're into that sort of thing, and I certainly enjoy it, freeze your DVD or Blu-ray at 45 minutes, 15 seconds for an excellent shot of the cameraman reflected in the newborn baby's huge, glassy eyes. So, the bug His presence has become known, and Jay and Kay go over to the farmhouse where he landed. And this has always been interesting. It's a great line, and I find myself saying it a lot. Dude was that ugly before he was an alien. But that line doesn't make a lot of sense. The audience, we know that Edgar looks terrible because we've seen him, we've seen his alien form. Jay hasn't. So why would Jay say that Edgar used to look ugly if used to look uglier if he doesn't know what Edgar looks like now? Is all that I'm saying. 47 minutes, hi cat, 56 seconds. Kay makes a point of telling Beatrice what she's going to believe. This is the first time, I believe, that we've seen anyone being given a story when they're neuralized. Why is he bothering to tell a story now? And why didn't Kay give a story to the doctor back in the NYPD hallway? And Jay, it's again, as a, I'm going to be saying a lot, a funny scene. But it doesn't make a lot of sense. The stuff that Jay is like, you're going to go into town, you're going to get yourself a better dress, and you're going to get an interior decorator. What does this have to do with her memory gaps? I'm saying nothing. So, 49 minutes, 58 seconds. The bug has killed off the Arkellian Majesty and, well, sort of, supposedly, and the big tall guy with spikes through the neck. And at this point, the dead Arkellian Majesty rides into the morgue complete with Cat. Does that make any sense? I mean, if somebody's walking their dog and they drop dead of a heart attack, does the dog go to the morgue? 52 minutes, exactly. This is the third time Kay has breezed into a building and claimed to be someone. First it was INS, then it was the FBI, now Department of Public Health, without showing credentials. Okay, I will buy that working on a scared farm wife. But savvy Dr. Weaver, come on. 54 minutes, 46 seconds. Hard to nitpick aliens. Earlier, the Arkellian Majesty was excited because he was going to get pierogi for lunch. Well, now we see the man's head open, and there's this 3-inch alien inside. And we see the inside of the head. There's no mouth in there. How, why, was he excited about pierogi just because he was really playing up his character? Or how does this alien eat stuff going in the human mouth? And how did the bug kill this alien by stabbing the human transport unit through the neck? I mean, I don't know. For example, C-3PO. I could tear off C-3PO's arm, and I'm sure he would complain about it in his prissy way, but it wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't die of blood loss. These are robots we're talking about, isn't it? It is also lucky for the movie that the Arkellian Majesty got to deliver his all-important message right before he died. 55 minutes, 44 seconds. Very interesting design element of the little alien inside the human head. The moment the alien died, the lights in the head went out. I'm not sure why, but it did tell us he was dead. So, 56 minutes, 8 seconds. I called her savvy Dr. Weaver. Now it's extremely blasé Dr. Weaver. You guys aren't really from the Department of Health, are you? She just saw a man's head open to reveal a tiny alien. And this is what she's on about? So do the sunglasses make any difference with the flashy thingy? Because at 56 minutes and 49 seconds, Jay does not have his on when Kay does the flashy thingy to Dr. Weaver for the second time in like a minute. I don't know why the effect wore off so fast with Dr. Weaver, but are the sunglasses just for show? Because Kay doesn't seem to be flashy thingy, or Jay doesn't, and yet he's not wearing them. 57 minutes. So they've just flashy thingy Dr. Weaver again, with, yet again, no attempt to make up a cover story. They just flash her and walk away. The previous flashy thing only lasted about 4 seconds. Now they're walking away, leaving an alien in plain view, assuming that it won't wear off so fast this time? I mean, is there no science to the flashy thing at all? I need there to be flashy thingy science, is what I'm saying. 57 minutes, 48 seconds. Kay says the bugs have unlimited strength. He calls it a being with unlimited strength. I'm just saying, for a being with unlimited strength, Edgar really has a hard time getting that diamond case open. Ha! 58 minutes, 51 seconds. I'm not sure this is a nit. Maybe this is just the government for you. But Kay retasks an entire satellite to voyeuristically look in on the woman that he left behind to become an MIB agent. That is a horrible waste of government resources. This is my money we're talking about. I pay taxes. 59 minutes, 40 seconds. This is an amazing satellite, though. This picture is coming from space. Yet, when it gets close enough in that you can see the woman's face, the video is not looking straight down, but over at the house, almost as though someone had a camera on a nearby hill. So somehow they curve the picture or something. It's also lucky she was outside, too. All we've been able to determine from satellite photographs is that it's not on the roof. 1 hour, 1 minute, 53 seconds. Kay is a little sadistic when they go to give Junior a weapon. He goes to the weapons locker, he holds up a big ol' Series 4 deatomizer, then a noisy cricket. It's a great joke, but why would he hold the first one up, or is he just rubbing it in Jay's face? 1 hour, 2 minutes, 35 seconds. The MIB agents are hot on the trail of this bug. Edgar parks his bug truck on the sidewalk, smashes into the jewelry store. 20 seconds later, a tow truck has pulled up and hooked up to the vehicle. That is the fastest tow service. I've had tows in my life, Lord knows. And I would say the average is about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes waiting for a tow. 20 seconds, that's something. 1 hour, 2 minutes, 45 seconds. Now, the Arkellian Majesty, we know now that the cat has the galaxy it's on his belt. The cat's named Orion. It's a collar, not a belt. A clever red herring with the whole Orion's belt thing. But the cat's collar has a galaxy on it, and whether or not you think that's a safe place to keep it, having a picture of yourself and your cat and the galaxy displayed in your jewelry store, I mean, that's just begging for trouble. If I had something incredibly valuable and important to hide, I wouldn't display a picture of it, is what I'm saying. 1 hour, 3 minutes, 33 seconds. Aha! We find out that the noisy cricket is incredibly powerful. Seems like it would have made sense for Kay to warn Jay about that. 1 hour, 4 minutes. Apparently, the noisy cricket's not even really powerful. It gets more powerful every time you use it. The first time it messed up the jewelry stop. The third time it blows a hole through a semi-truck. 1 hour, 4 minutes, 35 seconds. I mentioned how Edgar's ship keeps changing size. This is one time when it does again. 1 hour, 6 minutes, 38 seconds. So Frank the alien is disguised as a cute little dog. But listen, I have heard that New Yorkers are pretty, I've already used the word blasé, but are hard to impress. They've seen it all. They're blasé. But I would think even New Yorkers would notice if a dog started talking. 1 hour, 6 minutes, 40 seconds. He wanted to get in onto it. The last time we saw Kay, he was on the far side of the Ford. But suddenly, in this shot, he's leaning on the countertop next to Frank. He's practicing his ninja skills. So, the trail of the bug leads back to Dr. Weaver. 1 hour, 11 minutes, 40 seconds. Edgar is under the table holding Dr. Weaver hostage. Jay thinks that she's flirting with him. Oh, another funny scene. This is a fantastic comedic movie. The alien with his Edgar suit on is just a couple feet away from Jay. Okay, Jay can't see the creature. He's hidden under the table. But you're telling me he can't smell this thing? Come on. 1 hour, 14 minutes, 55 seconds. Jay and Kay are back at the MIB offices. Kay grabs a clerk and starts giving instructions for locking the city down. Why did he wait until he was back at the office to do this? I mean, he might have a very strict policy about not using his phone when he drives, but couldn't he have made the call before they got in the car? 1 hour, 15 minutes, 45 seconds. A Galactic Standard Week? How long is that? 1 hour. I don't know that it's a nit, but it is a remarkable coincidence that a Galactic Standard Week is not 3 hours, 5 minutes, or 4 days and 5 seconds. It's exactly 1 hour. So Jay and Kay figure out where the alien might find spacecraft he could take off on, and they decide to get in the car and quickly go and stop him. 1 hour, 17 minutes, 20 seconds. So Kay turns the corner in the tunnel. There's traffic up ahead. The speed they're traveling, I would guess, and I'm being generous in this guess, that they have maybe 4 seconds before they smack at full speed into the rear end of this traffic. Kay tells Jay to hit the button that he's never, ever, ever, ever supposed to hit, and he does, and the wonderful transformation begins. And 14 seconds later, they clear the traffic. So apparently, in addition to making the car look all cool, it also slows down time. 1 hour, 17 minutes, 45 seconds. As the agents zipped through the tunnel upside down, the jet engines on the car seemed to clear the cars below them by about 3 feet. lucky that there were no semi-trucks in the tunnel today. 1 hour, 19 minutes exactly, it's time for the Will Award. The Will Award, yes, that I give away... I give away out? Wow. On my podcast, that I give away or give out or give a wout to the nit which is the most ridiculous, the concept that's the hardest to swallow. And this one isn't even that bad. It's a very, very well-written movie. But what are the odds that the towers from the World's Fair, which are really disguised spaceships, and that's excellent. I love that. What are the odds that they're still operational? Aren't we trying to have some sort of control over the aliens that are on this Earth? But no, you can climb right up the tower and into the ship. There's no security personnel, no protocols. They're fueled and ready to go. Come on. 1 hour, 19 minutes, 35 seconds. We go back to the MIB war room, and the clerks, 8 minutes to the total destruction of Earth, and the clerks are calmly going about business as usual. 1 hour, 20 minutes, 17 seconds. The crowds boo as the Met center fielder is knocked on the head by a fly ball, distracted because of the alien ship overhead. Wonderful. But is this guy the only person that can see the ship? It's right there. New York baseball fans are serious. I'm just saying, if I was at the game, I would be well aware of the alien ship because I am very bored by baseball. But that's just me. 1 hour, 21 minutes, 28 seconds. Maybe 6 minutes left before the Arkellians destroy the Earth. But our stalwart MIB agents calmly wait while the spacecraft ramp comes down, and they don't shoot the incredibly dangerous Edgar bug the moment it shows its hideously ugly face. Why? Due process of alien law? 1 hour, 22 minutes, 9 seconds. Edgar starts ripping his human suit off, and again they just stand there. Shoot him! And I've already gone into how does the bug operate Edgar's eyes and mouth and fingers and so forth, so I won't go into it again. But it's still, it's amazing that he even fits in there. 1 hour, 23 minutes, 9 seconds. K, eat me! Eat me! Lucky for him, the alien complies and just swallows him whole instead of, you know, just chomping off part of him or even just doing the tentacle through the neck thing that he did in the diner to those two. Because then he'd get away with it, and the Earth would be destroyed. All right, I bet you never thought about this one. 1 hour, 24 minutes, 7 seconds. The Edgar-suited alien climbed into the first World's War spacecraft. It had a human-sized entryway. How is the bug planning on getting into the second one? 1 hour, 26 minutes, 21 seconds. Continuity error. I don't mention these a lot, but this one's amusing to me. After the Edgar alien, the half of him, has been destroyed. J and K are spitting out bug guts. It's a funny movie, but there are moments that are really gross. And Will Smith, at 126:21, opens up wide like something big is on the way. Then the frame following, where the shot changes, his mouth is closed again. So apparently he's just doing a quick yawn. 1 hour, 27 minutes, 12 seconds. In yet another display of ninja skills, the top half of the bug comes back for revenge, and neither J nor K notices. And just before it jumps on J, Dr. Weaver blows the thing apart. So she saw the bug coming. She picked up a weapon, which fortunately she didn't need to be trained how to use. I'm just saying, she might have wanted to say heads up or four or something. 1 hour, 27 minutes, 39 seconds. The agents are back in the car. Another nice feature of the Ford POS that they drive is the auto valet service. Just a moment ago, these two were sprayed with giant cockroach, and now their suits and faces are nice and clean. It's kind of unfortunate that Dr. Weaver didn't get the same treatment. Apparently, there's no back seat setting for the auto valet. So J and K and the beautiful Dr. Weaver are back at MIB headquarters, and K is pulling a D and saying that he's done being an MIB agent. And he looks up, he says, they're beautiful. The stars, 1 hour, 28 minutes, and 7 seconds. I'm not arguing with him. The stars are beautiful, but you're telling me you can see more than 2 or 3 stars in the middle of New York City at night? You know, this is the city that never sleeps. 1 hour, 28 minutes, 12 seconds. K is handing J his neuralizer because he's not been training a partner. He's been training a replacement. And he says, days, months, years. What he doesn't say is how far back he's supposed to set it. J is supposed to set it for zapping away all of the MIB knowledge that he needs to send K back to the real world. Does J just take his best guess? 1 hour, 29 minutes, 8 seconds. This proves right here that you don't need sunglasses for the whole flashy thingy, because Dr. Weaver is in the neuralizer's line of sight when J flashy thingy's K. She has no sunglasses on, and there's no indication that she loses all her memories. But this also proves, apparently, that it is MIB policy for agents to retire other agents. It's a pretty efficient system. And then, the joke about how Dennis Rodman's alien disguise is not very good, which is really funny. And I don't know when this movie came out. I wonder which was first, this reference or the moment in Third Rock from the Sun where Dennis Rodman shows up and is revealed to be an alien. But in both cases, funny stuff. 1 hour, 37 minutes, 22 seconds. In the credits, no animals or aliens. Nope, it doesn't say that. It says the aliens and animals used in this film were in no way mistreated. And a final note, no nitpicking here. The shot right before the credits start where they zoom out from J and, I don't know, W in New York all the way out to the Eastern Seaboard, to the world, to the universe and beyond, and it's just the entire universe is a marble in some alien's game. That is one of the best and most classic shots I've ever seen, and apparently it cost quite a bit of money. And according to the commentary, going from the pulling out from New York up to where they took over with computers was $1 million worth of helicoptering. I don't know, but it's a fantastic, fantastic ending to a really fantastic movie. And that is the nitpicking review of Men in Black. You made it all the way through. Good for you. I'm very proud of you. Excellent movie. A lot better than 2, and I haven't even seen 3, but even I'm one who is easily grossed out. I don't like bug stuff, but I don't even care that much about the plethora of bug shots in this movie because it's just so well done. So many great lines, fantastic performances. Obviously, they had a lot of fun. And yeah, that's it for Men in Black. In a fortnight, we will take a look at Jurassic Park 2, The Lost World, which is also a movie that was a lot of fun. I didn't expect it to be very good, but it's a fun movie. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to enjoy nitpicking it. And I told you at the start of this podcast that there would be a secret word at the end. Well, if you would like to... Well, A, before I talk about the secret word, if you're enjoying yourself, please do me the favor of going to iTunes and writing a review for this podcast. If you're not enjoying yourself, you don't need to bother doing that. That's fine. But no, if you like this and you'd like to say good things, we could use some reviews. Because as far as I know, we don't have any. But if you would like to catch me on Facebook or message me or email me at videoninja@juno.com or send me a comment at Movie Nitpicker, my WordPress blog, the secret word for this particular podcast is Triumph. Triumph, a company that made really classy motorcycles, and the secret word for this podcast. So, in the meantime, I hope that you will own your stage and that you're having a fantastic day today. And I will see you back here in a couple of weeks.